This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 145. If you're listening on drop day, it is Halloween, October 31st. Biggest fear. We're recording this before game five of the World Series starts. So hopefully it's not a fear of yours on Halloween, but right now, the day before ours, obviously the biggest fear in all Red Sox fans' minds is could the Yankees, right after the Red Sox 04 Netflix doc drops, could the Yankees have a ridiculous comeback of their own? Hopefully that's completely irrelevant by the time you're listening to this. This is the official podcast of Justice for Steve Ballmer, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us 5 stars, Apple, Spotify, all those places. 5 stars, subscribe, helps us out so much. Also on YouTube, on the WEI channel, you can subscribe to that channel and find the Play Tessie podcast playlist there, and as always on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. So it's just me, just Gordo and Sammy today. Pat's not here. Sammy's laughing about something.
You said Justice for Steve Ballmer. That's the owner of the Clippers. You're thinking of Steve Bartman, the guy who interfered in 2003 with the Cubs versus the Marlins.
I literally wrote it down for my open as Justice for Steve Bartman, and I said Steve Ballmer.
You love the Clippers, man. You're a big Clippers guy.
I watched that doc. They presented Steve Ballmer as like kind of a saint, and then the older owner was obviously a disaster. Quite the opposite.
But he's like an eccentric owner, tech guy. Like, I mean, he's probably not perfect, but a lot better than what's his name? Forget the guy's name.
Why am I forgetting his name?
Not a good guy. A bad guy, in fact. I go as far to say.
So. Not great. Forced to sell a team. If you're forced to sell a team, you're not starting off great. But we're here. We're patiently waiting. I was hoping this was going to be our first podcast of the offseason. I mean, honestly, as you're listening, maybe it is your first podcast listening experience of the offseason, but it's not our first podcast recording experience of the offseason. Obviously, we have to watch game five, I guess. So it was interesting. We were kind of going over, like earlier in the day, we were texting, What do we want to cover in this show? And we're going to talk like a little bit about what happened two nights ago, for if you're listening on drop day in the World Series. But we got like a gift from God with Alex Speer on he did a Reddit AMA. If you haven't seen it, you can check my Twitter feed at Boston Sports Gordo. I've got quotes from there, and you can just go below the quote and click the link. If you haven't read it, you should. It is super insightful, and we're going to go into all of that today. We've been kind of half in, half out, been waiting to like dive deep into the offseason stuff. Like, we've talked about it some, but I mean, when something like this drops, you got to dive in. But before we do it, How about those buffoons at Yankee Stadium assaulting Mookie Betts might be the best way to put it. I don't know. Yeah. I thought it was I don't know. Am I going to cancel it for thinking it's funny? I don't know. It was funny.
I almost did last night. I said on Twitter, I said, "All right, Red Sox fans, can we stop pretending to be offended by that? That was pretty funny." And I think the distinction I should have made was I didn't think the guy grabbing Mookie's wrist was funny. It was the other guy who grabbed the glove, tried to pry the glove open and take the ball out as if, like, one, he wouldn't get caught. Two, he wouldn't get kicked out. And three, that if Mookie had caught it and he did rip the ball out successfully, which he kind of did, then the ump would have been like, nope, not a catch. The ball came out of the glove. Sorry. And then they would have, like, what happens after this in this guy's head? Like, he high-fives his friend. They're like, we did it, dude. We helped the Yankees out. We saved an out, Mookie. Gotcha. Just objectively hilarious situation once we realized that Mookie was fine. He wasn't hurt. And the fact that it happened in the first inning, I think 4 outs into the game, those guys probably put down like $2,000 for those seats and they got 4 outs out of it. It's like $500 an out. So I thought it was hilarious. A lot of people were very angry with me for publicly saying
the only thing that would have made it not funny is if Mookie got hurt. And he didn't get hurt.
He clearly didn't. So that's why it was funny. So,
and like, trust me, like, I love Mookie Betts. Like, I'm always team Mookie. Like,
yeah,
love Mookie. And clearly he obviously was not going to be thrilled about strangers grabbing at him. But like, it was funny. They were two buffoons. Like, I don't know. They were just, it was funny because one of them was Gronk's college friend too. It was just very on brand, like classic New Yorkers. Like, yeah, this is Yankee Stadium in the World Series. They're going to advertise it as a tough place to play as an opposing player. And guess what? Like, it was. No one got hurt. Let's just laugh about it.
Now the guy was doing interviews at 2 a.m. at that bar outside of Yankee Stadium, Billy's, with, what's his name? Jesse Rogers, the reporter. Yeah.
And everyone got mad at him.
Yeah, everyone got mad at him. And they got mad at Jeff Passan for retweeting it. Like, my God, this is the most like hypersensitive climate ever. Nobody got hurt. The guy, relax, people. It was funny. And now he's at the Barstool Studios right now, like doing an interview.
Is that happening? Content.
Yeah, as we're recording. the one thing I didn't really like was another reason I thought it was funny was because like that dude's for sure banned for the season, at least, if not longer. And then the Yankees were like, no, you're good to come back for the next game. And then Major League Baseball kind of had to step in and be like, no. No, Yankees. No, he's not okay to stay. Like, you can't have him come back. And the Yankees were like, oh, okay.
Here's the thing. If I were the Yankees in this case, and like, obviously the league did what they definitely should have done. Like, you can't have, as the league, you can't have that stuff being glorified. That's why they don't show fans running on the field. When they like streak across the field, like on TV, they won't show it. But if I'm the Yankees, like, I plop those guys in the seats right next to the dugout. because you'll be in their heads all night.
You know what? I kind of said that, and then I was like, you know what? But if it were the Red Sox, I would kind of want to rub it in the other team's face too.
Exactly.
Like okay, all right, fair enough. It's funny. All these Red Sox fans, and I don't mean to come at Red Sox fans. We are Red Sox fans. They're like, oh, real classy, New York, real classy. Like, dude, we are literally Boston Red Sox fans. We're not known for being classy ourselves. Let's call a spade a spade. We're very similar fan bases in the way that we all operate. So anyway, I thought it was funny. I feel bad for the people who are still like, that was not funny. I simply didn't find it funny. It was atrocious. I saw that one guy get called a troglodyte.
Never heard that word.
It's a hell of an insult. That's like a very nerdy thing to call someone, but you know, it gets the point across. Anyway, I won't give credit to those guys, but that moment, that was pretty funny.
And we'll look back on it years from now. So I like when moments like that happen, good, like whether it be good or bad, I want memorable things to happen in the World Series. Obviously not like someone like dying in the world, because that would be memorable, but I wouldn't like that. But something like this, it's harmless. Like, being harmless.
If Mookie had died, then we wouldn't think it's funny.
Not funny.
But he didn't die. No one died. I hope that's the most memorable thing for the Yankees this World Series. Let's be clear about that. We don't want it to be too memorable.
Now, enough Yankee talk. We've kept the people waiting long enough.
Sox time.
Yeah, it's time for the Sox, and it's time what you came to do, to talk about what you came here to listen about. The Spear AMA. I'm telling you again, if you haven't read it, because Alex Spear is one of my favorite reads in the Red Sox media. He is terrific, so insightful. Is able to take difficult things to for normal people to grasp their hands around, for like how front offices think and how the Red Sox front office thinks, and present it in a way that's understandable for people.
He's like a translator almost.
Yeah.
Like the complicated stuff, he's able to kind of put it in layman's terms so that everyone can understand it.
And he does that while also providing information that I feel like it, for the most part, is usually like it's the first time we're hearing from it when it comes from Alex Spear. So when he drops articles, I make sure to read them. When he was doing this AMA, Ask Me Anything, I made sure to read the whole thing. And it was definitely, I mean, it lived up to my internal hype that I built up for it. Sammy, basically for those listening, I read this thing, and Sammy, you read it after, right?
Yep.
Ended up sending Sammy every quote from it that I thought was even semi-significant. And I don't know, maybe we just read off the quotes, and like some of them are like a little bit repetitive. But like the overall theme,
I've got one that stood out to me. If you want to just we can just go back and forth.
Yeah, give me the number one thing that stood out to you, and then I'll give you my general theme from it.
Okay, so here's a take that I had the opposite take on this, and we've discussed it before. He said, quote, "It's hard for me to see the Red Sox dealing either Roman Anthony or Christian Campbell under any circumstances." And then he mentioned Meyer is not far behind, and he thinks Kyle Teal would be the easiest to part with, but seems skeptical of any of the big three being dealt. Catchers are so hard to come by, especially catchers that stick. Who was the last catcher? I guess you could say Christian Vasquez, but even his tenure wasn't exceptionally long. Like a guy like Jason Varitek is so rare. And Kyle Teal, based on what we've been told and what we've seen, seems like a catcher that could have a long-term home, whether it's in Boston or elsewhere. So for me, even though his bat isn't quite the same as Meyer, Campbell, Anthony, him being a catcher to me made him, in my head, the toughest one for the Red Sox to move, just because so hard to come by. But I guess on the flip side, that would mean that teams are more interested in him because he's a catcher. So maybe I was looking at it through the wrong lens, like from the eyes of the Red Sox rather than the eyes of the buyer, whatever team that may be. Wanted to get your thoughts, Gordo. Were you surprised that Spear thinks that Kyle Teal might be the most, maybe not most likely, but a guy he could potentially see getting moved?
So the way that I look at it is, so you've got the big four prospects, and that's Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer, and Kyle Teal. And I think three of those guys have legitimate star, multi-time all-star potential. And the one there that doesn't is Kyle Teal. But as you said, catcher is such a valuable position if you can find a mainstay there. And like, I think there's this misconception that catcher is not an issue for the Red Sox right now, because Connor Wong's offense has been solid. But with the way that the catcher position for the Red Sox this year was at the bottom of the league defensively. And it's not like Connor Wong is going up there hitting like prime Buster Posey. So
he regressed.
It's definitely
too.
Yeah.
Defensively got worse.
Yes. Regressed defensively too. But that said, like, if I'm the Red Sox and I see three of these guys as future superstars and one of them as a mainstay that's not a star, regardless of position, man, I'm keeping the stars. I found it interesting. I remember last year it was Cotillo and McAdam on their pod had said, "We think Kyle Teal is the most untouchable." And obviously since then, Roman Anthony has like skyrocketed. So like, obviously that's an outdated take at this point. But I'm just saying, like, last year, I feel like they kind of introduced the Red Sox fan community to the idea of these prospects could be treated differently, not just based off of the potential they have, especially at the plate, but based off of the position they play. But one thing I'll tell you here, my takeaway from that can also be kind of connected to a takeaway from another quote. I'm going to try to find it. I just found it. Okay. He says, I do expect them to at least be engaged in trade talks about top-end talent like Garrett Crochet, since their pool of young talent in the big leagues and near the big leagues can match up with just about any club. Now, in the point that you made from the quote that you referenced, he said that he was skeptical that they would trade any of the big four, but seemed to have Kyle Teal as the most likely to be dealt. But he did say that he'd be skeptical of any of those guys being dealt. I find it interesting to see him say that he thinks they'll be in discussions for a top-of-the-line starting pitcher like Garrett Crochet without, but also maintaining the opinion that he doesn't think the big four are going to get traded. Like, does that make sense? Like obviously that can involve Jaron Duran. It can involve Tristan Casas, who he said somewhere in here, I'll find the quote. He said Casas.
He said it's unlikely he gets moved, but the chances are more than zero. Basically what we've been saying for a while, what most people have been saying.
They said they have to be open-minded, but the bar for dealing Casas would have to be very, very high. He said, I'd say the chances of dealing Casas are low, but greater than zero.
Yeah. So when it comes to Crochet, I really can't fathom a trade package for him that doesn't include at least one of the big three, because the White Sox are so, so far from contending. Even a guy like Jaron Duran, who's what, 27, 28 years old, by the time the White Sox are contending, at the very best, Duran's going to be like 30, 31 years old. And for a guy who's, you know, a lot of his success is predicated on his speed, don't think they'd want him. Willier Abreu, very good player. I don't think that's enough to get Garrett Crochet. Casas, maybe, but I don't think the Red Sox would even consider that, because that's 4 or 5 years of Casas. Goro, you know the Casas contract.
4 years
of Casas for 2 years of Crochet. That doesn't really make sense to me. I doubt it makes sense to the Red Sox. So if they're going to look at Crochet, I figure it has to include at least one of those big four. I think it's officially a big four, not a big three at this point. One of those big four guys. I don't think Braden Montgomery from the Red Sox, not Colson Montgomery from the White Sox. I don't think Braden Montgomery is going to be even considered in a trade, considering he's hurt and hasn't even played for the Red Sox affiliates yet. So I don't know. Maybe you have something in the back of your mind that could bring Crochet here for someone, not including those four. But I'll
give you an idea. The idea here, I mean, I agree with your point about Jaron, and I think it goes for Casas too, just because 4 years is a lot different than 5 years or 6 years. I think Willier would be on the table. They did just trade Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech in a deal that brought them back Miguel Vargas, who's already a big leaguer. So I don't think that that's a team that is opposed to taking guys that are already at the big league level. But I think 4 years, I don't know about that. But that being said, three-team trades are an option. And if you trade Jaron Duran or Cutter Crawford, like I am so curious to know what is the best the Red Sox could do putting together a package of Willier Abreu, Cutter Crawford, and one of their good but not elite, like top 10 prospect, but not top five, like a Yoelin Cespedes.
What if it would be, I don't think Cespedes is that highly regarded.
Or Blaise, like I'm just saying, Blaise. Or Arias. Okay, Arias is a top 100 guy now.
There you go. Yeah, Arias is a good one. So you could do like Willier Abreu, Quinn Priester, Franklin Arias. And I still don't think that's enough.
I don't know if it would be enough for Crochet, but you could get, like, I would be curious. Yeah. I'd be so curious to know what that gets you, because you could also, like, what if you offered the White Sox, and we'll get into this so many times in the offseason, but would the White Sox really get a better offer for 2 years of Crochet than 5 years of Willier Abreu, 4 years of Cutter Crawford, the max of Franklin Arias and Yoelin Cespedes? Like those, like a 4-for-1 deal, just like looking at the deals that, like, they traded 2 years of Dylan Cease for considerably less than that.
I mean, I could see like the Diamondbacks offering them like Drew Jones and
Jordan Lawler.
If they offered
Lawler, then it's, yeah,
you're kind of cooked. But if they offered Lawler, would you then be like, all right, Marcelo Meyer?
Well, I'm open to dealing any of the big four, save for Roman Anthony, if you get Garrett Crochet and extend him. So I'm not sitting here I'm not saying I would definitely do it, But if I had an extension in hand with Garrett Crochet, like, yeah, pretty much anything's on the table there, except for, in my opinion, Roman Anthony and Tristan Casas.
Yeah, it's tough, man. This is going to be such an interesting offseason. I'm wondering if the White Sox have any, like, shitty contracts that maybe the Red Sox could take on to
Benintendi, but that's a terrible fit.
Oh my God.
They couldn't take on a lefty with no power, like no defense. Yeah. Like,
not much.
I'm sorry.
Speed.
Love you, Benny.
Yeah, appreciate the memories, but
yeah. Woof. Great catch in the ALCS. Just overall good offensive years with the Sox, not taking on that contract. Do they have anything else contract wise?
It's just a barren wasteland. They have
they paid Luis Robert, but that's a good contract. So
yeah, he doesn't make much money. Well, he was awful last year. He had a really bad season. So maybe Lou Bob, buy low on Lou Bob. We have him replace Tyler O'Neill, save that qualifying offer. Maybe
Sammy, I'll tell you, I buy low on Lou Bob is still a big price to pay, but I would pay it in the right like scenario. Like if there's a scenario where you want Sedan to be a utility guy, which I think is a conversation that we need to flush out in a future show, because I definitely think it's something worth considering. If they're willing to do that, then Lou Bob makes sense. If Sedan is your center fielder of the future, then he doesn't, because you'd be paying for a guy who's a really good bat with elite defense, but you'd be playing him not in center field, which I feel like at that point you might as well just pay for a bat who doesn't play defense.
I don't know how good Luis Robert's defense is going to be long term, because he has serious injury issues. He's actually a lot like Tyler O'Neill, who was an elite defender a few years ago, and we saw him last year. He was I wouldn't call him a butcher in the outfield, but he was very below average out there. So maybe if you get Lou Bob, you put him in that DH corner outfield, a little bit of center field if needed, that kind of spot.
Yeah, I want to pull up his Savant page to see how his defense was.
75th percentile. So he's still good, but not as good.
Not as good.
Yeah. So it's already regressing. And he's not old. He's 27 years old, which
last year.
It's only 2 years younger than me. So he's pretty young.
He was 97th percentile fielding run value in 2023, dropped down to 50th percentile in fielding run value in 2024. Obviously, way more hurt. So I'm sure he was playing hurt to an extent. But again, we've seen so many guys, Tyler O'Neill, great example by you, Sammy, guys who get hurt. And it's not like they're playing hurt, but when injuries stack up, you're just not the same athletic performer as you were. So that'll be an interesting one to monitor. I don't know. Maybe the White Sox deal him if they get, but I'm sure like it's going to kill them getting nowhere close to the offers this time around that they were getting last year. I want to give you my general theme, and you can tell me if you agree. Because, again, if you haven't read the Alex Speer AMA and you live and breathe Red Sox like we do, I really highly recommend reading it, because it's not like he's, like, reporting, oh, the Red Sox, like, have had discussions with this player, or the Red Sox have had discussions with this team, and, like, I'd expect... He's not giving you specific players that the Red Sox are going to be interested in, but I'll give you a theme from this that I think is undeniable, is that Alex Speer, a guy who last year, I don't think really bought the Kool-Aid of the full throttle thing. Like, basically, like, we heard full throttle, but then you had the reports from a lot of people. Sean McAdam and Chris Cotillo were in there too, saying that, like, yeah, they said full throttle, but that's not how they're behaving. So he didn't buy the Kool-Aid last year, but this year, man, he's talking a lot about, he said that he thinks the Red Sox are going to hand out a 9-figure deal this offseason. He said, okay, I'm going to try to find this quote.
Yeah, I know the quote you're talking about. And he said 100 million plus, and a lot of people reacted and said 100 million. That's not enough to get you a superstar. That's blah, blah, blah. But he said 100 million plus. So, in my head, that's a $350 million deal. There you go. Let it be done.
All right. Yes, that was the quote. There was another quote that I was looking for, and here we go. He said, at a certain point, teams have to care less about efficiency than impact if the goal is to build a championship. And I think the Sox seem increasingly open to this accepting that notion this offseason. So the reason I find this to be so significant that, and like he has stuff like that littered throughout the AMA, where he's talking about giving out 9-figure deals, and you know, the Sox seemingly like transitioning this mindset to, okay, it's time to go. Like that was all over the thing. And I think back to last year, I compare everything. Everything that we hear this year, I compare to last year. What's similar, what's different? When the Red Sox did the postseason press conferences and, you know, Craig Breslow goes on Baseball Isn't Boring with Rob, and they all did like Tom Caron and Alex Spears show, and the themes were all the same. It was, it's time to go. We're going to go for the division. Enough messing around. And to me, that was very similar to the stuff we heard last year. The only difference was they were saying more of it. Last year, we didn't hear the sources saying stuff. It was like sources are saying opposites. Now we're getting stuff from Alex Speer, who's as tapped in as anybody when it comes to the Red Sox. And what he's hearing is matching what they're saying. And I'm struggling because I told myself I'm going to believe it when I see it. And that is how anytime I post any of this stuff on Twitter, that is how everyone is reacting.
Yeah.
And I think it should be how you react.
Yep.
But it's getting harder and harder for me to get to a point where if they don't do something this offseason, I won't be disappointed. I feel like I'm getting to that point where I'm going to get hurt again if they don't do anything.
Oh, yeah. I always say I'm not going to – I'll believe it when I see it, and then I always end up getting hurt. But it's a little bit different. And you know me, Gordo, I always kind of no-sell those quotes from the front office. It's a little bit different to me when it's Spear, like you just alluded to. He's very tapped into that, and – if he's saying it, look here, I'm doing it on camera. I'm talking myself into it as we speak. Here's the thing that gives me a little bit of hope. What would be the other option at this point? There's too many guys on the roster, too much talent in AAA, not just the minors, in AAA, knocking on the door. Too much, and you have glaring needs. Like, something's got to give.
He talked about this too.
There's one. Can I read the quote? I feel like it's just converging into a path that says invest, buy, whether that's trading prospects, extending guys, signing free agents, or all three. Let's do all three. It has to happen, right?
I 100% agree. And if you want to talk about patterns from the past, that's what they've done in the past. Like specifically, and they've compared this offseason. Alex Cora specifically compared this offseason to the after 2015 going into 2016 offseason. The alternative here is to just continue the build organically. And he actually said something about this. He says it's possible that they could be competitive if they simply continued an organic build with the current Orioles serving as something of a model for what they can accomplish. But they'll have to flip a risk-taking switch at some point via trades and or free agency if they want to put themselves in true championship contention. And it feels like there's an acknowledgement that they can't make fans wait for that shift in behavior any longer. And I find that quote interesting because it's true. You can be a good competitive team by just building organically and going through the system and doing what you can and making really, I don't want to say cutthroat, but like you're being careful when you're making trades, and every dollar is careful. But you see that with teams like Baltimore and Cleveland, and to be honest with you, those teams are not the teams that have made it to the promised land. Like last year, the Rangers won the World Series and they did it because they had stars. This year, maybe you know who won the World Series. Maybe the Dodgers have won the World Series by the time you're listening to this, but it's either them or the Yankees in present time for us. And regardless of who it is there, they have stars. So yeah, they could build it organically, Sammy, and do what we think is impossible and just keep it going like they've been doing for 5 years. But at a certain point, like, You have so many left-handed bats that you can put in the lineup at one time. Something's got to give. They just got to get it right.
It's just so frustrating because, yeah, they could just build internally. But why would you if you don't have to? Look at, like you just said, Yankees and Dodgers in the World Series. The Mets almost made it too. All three of those teams are huge spenders. And I know everyone will say, well, Cleveland was the other team in the American League. The American League was awful this year. Look at this playoff picture in the AL, the Astros regressed, the Orioles are all like 14 years old, the Tigers made it, they had like two openers pitching in their series, just like bad slate for the AL this year. Point being, spending money, like we always say, it doesn't guarantee winning, but it makes it a hell of a lot easier. If I'm going to walk to downtown Boston, I'm going to get there a hell of a lot faster if I take the T. So I want the Red Sox to get on the T and stop walking everywhere, make it quicker. Like they looking at this playoff slate, hindsight 2020, Red Sox could have been in it. 81-81 with minimal investments and a lot of bad injury luck. To be totally fair, they did have unusually bad injury luck. But still, man, like they could, at the deadline, a little bit more aggressive. In the offseason, a few more pieces. A few more quality pieces.
A right-handed bat, man.
A right-handed bat.
He said it so many times.
Right-handed bat, left-handed bullpen. Just so many little things they could have done that maybe push them ahead of the fucking Tigers. The Tigers made it. Look at that roster. The Tigers sold at the deadline and made it. Crazy. So
let me give you a quote. Here. Yeah, I've got another quote for you in on the topic of spending. He says, my guess, and he emphasizes guess, is that we're going to see them spending to relative levels beyond the way that they've conducted business in the last handful of years. It wouldn't surprise me to see them spending to, say, the top 5 to 8 teams in baseball in the years to come. I'm not sure that I see them spending to the top of the sport and fielding payrolls that track with the current spending of the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees, which my take on that is I don't need you to get to the Mets level of spending, because if you develop the right guys internally and you've got a full forced system, you don't need to spend to that level. But I do want to see you go over the luxury tax at least like half the time. I do want to see you be willing to invest in quote-unquote mega deals, which I found interesting to see that former Red Sox exec Zach Scott said this week that John Henry said that he does not believe in mega deals when they were trying to negotiate something with Mookie Betts. And clearly, that lack of belief in mega deals was a significant reason why Betts was traded. I want to see them willing to do those things because they make the money with the top, they make as much money in revenue as any team in baseball. So you got to spend like the teams that are also making that caliber of money. That's what's important to me. And you know what? If you're in the top 5 to 8, it may not be what it used to be, but other teams are making more money and have richer owners than they did in the early 2000s in the 2010 era of Red Sox spending. So it's a different landscape. You don't have to be number 1, 2, or 3, but it's not too much to ask to be 5th, 6th. And I think I'm being nice there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They don't need to be the Mets in terms of spending. Just spend like the Red Sox used to spend. And they were never like number one spenders, but they were always, you know, in the mix, those top teams. And I think that a lot of the disgruntled fans, a lot of that comes from on top of the teams not being very good. When the Red Sox make a massive profit and it feels like they're half-assing the team, that's just a really bad message to send to a smart fan base. Say what you want about Red Sox fans. I would put Red Sox fans up against any other fan base in terms of how locked in they are, how smart they are, how much they know, not just the game of baseball, but the industry of baseball. So you can't just keep getting away with that and expect fans to show up. We saw what Fenway looked like in September this year. Again, pretty depressing. Wouldn't say it was like a morgue like in 2023, but it was pretty, pretty quiet in 2024 at the end. And it's depressing as guys like us who continue to show up because we're sick freaks and we're addicted to Red Sox baseball. It's sad to see. And when you operate that way, it's just you're praying that all these young guys hit at the same time. And if they don't, maybe next year. So I need that to change for my own sake, too.
It's funny. You give a take and it's like I've got a quote that Matt that like comments on your take. It's usually like we give a quote. And then we give a take on the quote. It's like you're giving a quote, and then I give you something that Alex said. And he said here, quote, it does feel like Red Sox officials feel like it's on them to build a team that will inspire Fenway to be at a higher pitch. Basically, not a morgue. I dream of it, man. But how awesome would a world be where, you know, the Red Sox spend money on multiple and make trades and bring in multiple legitimate star impact guys this offseason? And throughout the course of the 2025 season are bringing up these 4 elite prospects. So it's like, I mean, that feeling when a prospect gets called up, like a big prospect, is it's such a cool feeling because you feel like you're watching the beginning of something awesome with every at-bat that they take. You're like locked in. Like when Tristan Casas first came up, I was so locked in with every plate appearance he had. And it was the same thing when Jaron Duran came up. It was the same thing when Devers came up. All these guys, recent prospects that came up to the Sox, you have that feeling. But to have that feeling and have the team be winning because they have legitimate star players. Like if they signed Max Fried and traded, the right-handed bat discussion is something we're going to have a full flush discussion about because I'm having trouble. There is no perfect free agent right-handed bat for the Red Sox, and there's no like trade candidates. Like we'll see. Like that's why we have to flush it out because we need ideas.
Gordo, real quick, before we move on from this, I agree. You and I, guys like us, we do get excited when a prospect comes up because, like you said, it does feel like the start of something fun. And as much as I just, you know, glazed Red Sox fans saying how great they are and how locked in they are, how many people are like, all right, I've been waiting for Roman Anthony, the number one prospect in baseball. Still, how many people are like, oh yeah, this fires me up?
These days? These days, I think more than in the past, because I think that's just been what's marketed.
Maybe more than in the past, but I'm thinking of like, think of like a friend of yours who watches 25 games a year, maybe go to one or two, and they like, they're a paying customer. Red Sox, the casual fans are extremely important because we know the hardcore fans, they're always going to tune in. So if the Red Sox want to make the most profit, they need to attract the casual fans, which is what they haven't been doing in recent years. Do those people get excited by Marcelo Meyer getting called up, Christian Campbell, who there's no shot they knew about a year ago today? Like,
you know, Sammy, I'm going to push back on you a little bit and this is just like under the assumption here that Red Sox and Celtics fans have a legitimate amount of overlap. But I just remember last year, anytime Jordan Walsh, for those of you who don't know Jordan Walsh, he was the Celtics' second round pick. He was their only draft pick last year. And anytime he got into the game, anytime he touched the ball, fans were like begging for him to score because they wanted to see the new guy score. Boston fans are among the smartest fans in the country, if not the smartest fans in multiple sports. Like, you got to give them credit for it. And with the way these kids have been being marketed, like, it feels like Marcelo Meyer has been around forever. Like,
yeah.
When he finally gets called up, the hype, like, even though Roman Anthony, I think, almost unanimously at this point is seen as the better prospect, when Marcelo gets called up, the media hype around that, I don't care if you think there's less media around the Red Sox these days. Obviously there is compared to like the 04 era, but that's everyone is going to be talking about it. Anytime I think any of these guys gets called up, particularly Meyer and Anthony.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's the same as like, what's a good example?
Ellsbury.
No. I'm trying to think of like David Price being signed.
Oh, no, it's not.
It's even close.
No. I'm saying, but if you imagine a world where you get both, like we get the Max Fried press conference.
Well, yeah.
They make a trade for a right-handed bat. And now we get to have these prospects called up littered throughout the season. Like it has potential to be an incredible base season. I want to use that carefully because I feel like this year was also kind of a base season.
What's a base season?
Like, this
like the
year,
start of the new foundation, like the first
right.
The
this first year they proved
in John Henry's next epic quest.
Yeah, the fucking epic quest. Yeah,
epic quest, yeah. Bro.
It was an epic quest, and who's the epic quest this time is to achieve winning a World Series outside the top 10 in payroll. I've won four inside the top 10. Now I got to prove I can do it without it.
How exciting is that? No, I hear what you're saying, Gordo. I'm just thinking in a vacuum, like how many. If we went down this street in Boston, in the Fenway area, and we were like, how hyped are you for Roman Anthony? I think a lot of people would know who he is, but a lot would also be like, oh, I've heard of him. I think, who is that? Roman Swipes? Is that the...
I think more people know condoms? Who he is than you think. I know that we are very close to the center of the forest. Like, we are in the epicenter of it in terms of, like, people who pay attention to this team, but I've got a lot of friends who are casuals, and they may not know Christian Campbell yet, but they definitely know Meyer and Anthony, and I think most of them even know Teal at this point too.
Can't see the forest for the trees.
That's the grammar in that phrase or expression or whatever the hell it is doesn't make any sense to me.
It just means like if you're too focused on little details, you'll miss the big picture. But
yeah,
actually, that really applies to the.
That applies to
the
to us.
Last few years. Wow. I didn't even... It's a coincidence you said forest, so... that word is tough for me with my gross Massachusetts accent-y.
Forest?
Slang. Forest. I say forest. I have to, like... It feels like I have to, like, contort my mouth to say
forest. It feels like a Jewish mom thing.
forest. Honey, get out of the forest.
Yeah. Is that a Massachusetts thing? Are we just like...
Yeah. Oh, dude, you should hear my grandma who grew up in Dorchester. She's
a
like,
Jewish
oh,
mom,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She very Jewish mother.
Yeah.
Forest. Florida. Farhead. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I we'll see. That's interesting. I wish there was a way to measure, like, what is a casual fan, A, and then B, how many of those fans are aware of, like, Christian Campbell. That would be the measuring stick, because Christian Campbell was not a household name a year ago, and now
I bet
he
not
is.
Many.
Yeah, it's tough.
Even
man,
though he's a top 10 prospect, I bet it's not many. But that's just because he ascended so fast and hasn't had like last year. We had this whole offseason where they touted the big three, and then they went out and performed. This year with Campbell, it's like he went out and performed, but people don't watch minor league games, so the only thing they know about prospects is when they're hyped by the media. So now that Christian Campbell won all those awards, now he's on the scene, but it's like he's been on the scene for what, a month?
Yeah, about.
So
the
yeah,
thing I is mean, though, at the end of the day, if they win games, people will tune in, people will show up. So
yep,
none of that will matter in the end, but then that's still like you still got like half a season of seats that you got to fill before that, you know, before people buy in to a team. So it's an interesting thing to think about, the casual fans and prospects. And by the
overall,
way, I don't mean casual fan in a derogatory way.
No.
I'm talking about like me as like a Bruins fan. Like I like love the Bruins, watch all the playoff games. Regular season, I'll watch 20 to 40 games. Like I'm watching half the games at most. Like how much do I know about Fabian Lysell? And would I be so excited by his debut that I'd be like, I gotta watch this? Like,
but Sammy, hold on. This is a good comp because I barely watch the Bruins. Like I root for them. I certainly watch all the playoff games, but like I watch every Celtics game, just not that into hockey. But if the Bruins had the number one, like basically if the Bruins had the number one pick in the draft, I would definitely know who that is.
Okay, so if they had Celebrini, do you know who Celebrini is?
No.
All right, he was like the guy this year in the draft. He's on the Sharks. He played one.
If you're on the Bruins, I would know who he is.
Okay.
Even if he wasn't going to debut for a couple, like if he got drafted and was like going to college after or something.
But respectfully, you're not a great example to use because you're very, very locked into the world of Boston sports. But I hear what you're saying. But you're
also helps
case.
If you're Twitter, heavy Twitter users too. Like you got to get off the Twitter people. All the Twitter people.
Twitter's not
know
real life.
These guys. Yeah, Twitter's not real life.
Yeah. I got to get off Twitter. I hate Twitter so much, dude. Every day I hate it more. Such poison.
Would you like it better if we called it X?
What's that stupid thing Elon Musk does? He jumps at
X.
Yay! I do like the community notes that he added. That's like the one thing I like. Where if like someone
tweets, oh, the community notes are funny.
It's like factually incorrect. They'll flag it and be like, "This is not true. Here is the truth." I kind of like that, but then at the same time, you're like, "Can we trust the community?" Now? Anyway, carrying on.
Last, just in conclusion, the AMA from Alex Speer got me excited, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. He did say that last year with Yamamoto, I'll find the quote. They basically misjudged the market.
Yeah, you can summarize it. They misjudged the market, which, and I texted you about this earlier, me, you, and Pat, way before the offseason, when the 200 million thing came out, all three of us, without hesitation, we all said, 200 million, that's going to be probably closer to 300 or more, right? I'm not misremembering. I feel like
we
all
said
that. How did the Red Sox not say that, too? Like, that's a red flag. I'm no genius. I'll speak for myself. I'm no genius. I've been hit in the head a lot, but I knew that Yamamoto was going to get $300 million. How did the friggin' Boston Red Sox not... How do you misjudge that?
You know, Sammy, it was interesting because when we had those conversations early last offseason, it was like everyone here is saying Yamamoto's going to get $200 million, but why is it not $300 million? We had those questions.
25-year-old ace caliber pitcher. Where we did... No, like very pretty much no history of injury at all. What are we doing here? It had to be over $300 million. We all nailed it. And you're telling me the Red Sox thought, what would they think?
Here's the quote. It was from Alex Speer. Last offseason, They hope to make a big push for Yamamoto, but my understanding is the bidding vastly exceeded their expectations and they weren't particularly close. But had they signed him, or for that matter, Lugo or Imanaga or Flaherty or some of the other starters they pursued last winter, this season could have taken a very different direction, including at the trade deadline, which is true. Like if they had, you know, an ace caliber guy throwing the starts that like Cooper Criswell threw this year, like, yeah, that's a completely different team. So it's not wrong, but yeah, I mean they completely
did the quote say they vastly underestimated or misjudged?
No, he didn't say they vastly misjudged it, or did they? Did it? It said they vastly. I thought missed out. It said the bidding vastly exceeded their expectations. So yeah, I guess that's a kind way of saying they vastly misjudged.
What did he get in the end? 325 or something?
325, and I think initially people like media people were saying he was going to get like 210, 215 at the start.
How's that not a red flag? That's such a red flag for me. If you thought, like, again, well, I'm not the brightest guy in the world. And if I knew that, how the hell did the Red Sox not? Me, you, Pat, we all knew it. What the fuck, Sox?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly exceeded your expectations. That was right in the ballpark for every friggin' fan on Twitter, every fan on the street, even the casual fans who we just spoke about. They all said, yeah, Yamamoto, $325 million. Yeah. They all said it.
But you know what, Sammy? It all goes back to square one, where yes, like getting value is important. And certainly when you're in the early stages of a build, it's really important. But at a certain point, and I hope that it's at this point, and it seems like Alex Speer thinks it's at this point, and it seems like the Red Sox have been telling us that it's at this point, you got to stop worrying about value and worry about impact. And if you see a guy, the example can be David Price, that you think can push you over the edge, you give him whatever it takes to join your team. And they gave David Price like $40 million more than the next best offer from St. Louis to ensure that he would join the team, because he wasn't all that enthusiastic about Boston at first and throughout the contract. But it got him to come here, and he was a huge part of winning a World Series for the Red Sox. And they didn't win that World Series because they got good value. They won that World Series because they got the right dudes to push them over that line. And they were the best team in baseball because of it.
Right. And what they shouldn't do is make like a Trevor Story kind of move. Like late in the offseason, he's still out there. Maybe he's not a perfect fit, but like, you know, better than nothing. That don't do that. Or like a Sandoval thing where it's similar. Like not the best fit, but, you know, I guess it kind of fits. Like,
Sandoval's Pete Alonso, where you're going for a guy that you know would like sell jerseys and like he's marketable and like, oh, he's won multiple home run derbies and whatnot. Like,
wow, that's harsh, Gordo.
I don't think Pete Alonso is going to have a very good whoever signs him, I don't think it's going to be a good contract. He strikes out so much, just like not a good fit, especially for a team like the Red Sox. If you got a team that can put the ball in play and just needs 30 plus homers from anybody, like, yeah, go for it. But yeah,
not with the Red Sox at all. So by the way, I didn't mean to throw shade at Trevor Story. It's just like the
kind of, no, like, I get what you're saying.
It felt like he was just out there and they're like, okay, fine, why not? Like, identify a guy, yeah, get the guy, and can we not sign guys who are hurt that you just want to rehab? Like, do that on the fringes, sure.
I like those signings.
Trevor Story, who you sign him and his elbow's falling apart. You're like, yeah, we know elbow's falling apart. He can play second base.
But like, if they sign like Shane Bieber and they pay him legitimate money, but it's not like Shane Bieber, if he were healthy and made it to this offseason healthy and pitching the way he pitched, like that's a guy who's about to make million. Yeah, exactly. But now it's like either he's going to get a 1-year prove it deal, or if he wants to cash in, he'll get like what, like 55, 60 million? Which he probably shouldn't do.
Yeah,
but
I don't know if I'm on the Red Sox though. Like, right,
well, not
now.
It's not ideal because you've got Giolito starting and coming off of injury too. But like, if they got like Crochet or Max Fried and traded a starter and said, okay, like we'll bring in Shane Bieber and he can come back in the middle of the season. We think he's going to be an ace and come postseason time, like we'll be starting like Max Fried, Shane Bieber, Tanner Houck, Brian Bale, like, yeah, like,
sure, yeah,
that would get me out of bed, man. There's a lot of scenarios, but yeah, he'd be the bare minimum of best, and we'll have a whole podcast of like what is the best or what is the worst guy that they could get and you'd be satisfied with it. He's around there for me. Like
I got an answer, and
I like him a lot.
He might be pitching as we record tonight. So anyway, let's
get to the listener question. Yes. Yeah, let's get to the listener question and then we'll get on out of here. Pretty simple, easy one. This one comes from Adam. He wants to know, and it's timely because it's Halloween. Happy Halloween. Gummy bears or Swedish fish? I bet you know what I'll say to this.
Gummy bears. Well, what kind of gummy? Like just standard gummy bears?
It's true. This is kind of a loaded question because Swedish fish are consistent across the board, but gummy bears, they vary significantly by brand. Like,
let's just do like your standard. What's the biggest gummy bear?
Haribo probably is the biggest, or Black Forest.
Gummy bear. No, not the song. Company.
Just like who's the biggest gummy bear manufacturer?
Yeah, I guess Haribo. Do you know they're from Germany?
I had no idea. I also didn't know it was pronounced Haribo.
It might not be. You might be right. I always thought they were from like Japan. It looks like a Japanese candy. Like, you know how they have the fun art on the candy? And then I read the back and said, kommt aus Deutschland. Very cool.
Mm. So what's your answer? Let's. Okay. And I'll get specific with it. And I'll even go first. If it's a good gummy bear brand and the Fenway Park gummy bears that they give in the media dining area certainly count, even though they give me a stomachache every single time. If it's those, I know the Target brand gummy bear is really good. So if it's like those gummy bears, that's on top. And then Swedish fish comes second. And then Haribo gummy bears and like the gummy bears that are a little bit harder to chew and don't quite have as much flavor, those come third. So it's like a sandwich. Gummy bears are the best, but it's got to be the right ones.
I think this is a blowout. Swedish fish, man. They're so good. They're so good, and they're consistent across the board, like you said. I think I was thinking, you know how sometimes gummy bears have the sour like crystals on them?
Yeah,
like,
those are good. I like those.
That bumps it up a little bit for me. Big fan of like Warheads and stuff like that. Sour candy, but I can't put them up against Swedish fish. By the way, if you ever go to Trader Joe's, they have it's not Swedish fish, but it's very similar.
Oh, Scandinavian swimmers.
Yes. Oh my.
Yeah, so good. So good. Those might
taste just like Swedish fish, but you got a little variety in the flavor. So I highly recommend Scandinavian swimmers. You knew that right away.
Yeah, dude, it changed my life. They're so good.
Scandinavian swimmers. Sounds like I won't even say. I'd go with Swedish fish like 95% of the time.
I heard somewhere that they're changing the name of goldfish, and I can't remember what they're changing it to. And I think it's bullshit, but I did read that I'm gonna try to find this out. Goldfish.
Chilean sea bass?
Yeah, Chilean sea bass.
This has to be fake.
That's what it...
No, it's temporary. It's temporary.
What does it say? Why are they doing it?
Goldfish isn't just for kids anymore. Fishing, it's changing its name to something more serious.
What does that even mean?
This has to be fake. Goldfish is for a little while. Yeah, it's temporary.
Okay.
Is this a prank? Is this April 1st?
No, I saw it recently. I don't know what the hell it's about, but yeah. I don't know. But yeah, okay. So gummy bears from me, Swedish fish from Sammy. I think I gave kind of a wishy-washy answer, but if you get a good gummy bear, nothing beats it.
So I wish the people could see what happens every time we go to Fenway and you do the same thing every time. You get the cup of gummy bears and you're like, all right, I'm not going to go too hard on these. And then by the time we're leaving the dining room, you're like, oh, my stomach is really hurting me.
Every single time. And we walk down the ramp or go down the elevator and it's, oh, God.
Sometimes the elevator attendant will kind of like roast you, be like, got a tummy ache, bro. Never had one in my life.
Oh, my God. All right. I think that's a good spot to wrap. So we appreciate you guys tuning in for episode, 145 of Play Tessie. My God, 145 episodes. But maybe by the next time you, or maybe when you're listening to us now it's the off season. Who knows? We don't know. You do, but maybe next time, if it's not the off season, it will be.
Go Dodgers.
Go Dodgers. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate 5 stars, all that on YouTube at the WEI channel. We got a playlist there. So go find the Playtesty playlist, hit the thumbs up on the videos, subscribe to WEI, and find us on the socials at Playtesty on both Twitter and Instagram. So for Sammy and for Joe, who's in the back, it's Gordo here for Playtesty episode 145. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.